Again, I apologize for starting late tonight. We had an extended closed session, unfortunately, and the board appreciates everyone coming tonight, and there are quite a few presentations, and we're honored to have the students here tonight to share their project with us, so we're excited about that. There's just a few housekeeping items, trustees. I just wanted to make sure that the board is okay on our order of business, if there's any changes.
I would like to ask if my fellow board members would indulge me by changing the order of business on the agenda to move the action discussion items 5, 6, and 7 so that they would occur after items 1 and 2 and then follow the action discussion items with the resolutions, because I need to excuse myself early and I'd like to be here for the action discussion.
So is there any comment upon Marilyn's request to move 5, 6, 7 after 1, 2 and put 3 and 4 after 7? Seeing none, we'll change the order of business as proposed by Marilyn Rogers.
Thank you, everyone.
Mr. President.
Thank you. Yes, Walt.
If it would help, we could move board reports to after the action consent agenda.
Does anybody want to follow Mr. Millar's subterfuge in getting this desired result that he's been trying to for weeks? Would you like us to do that? Okay, thank you, Walt. We next have 3 minutes to approve before we can actually move on to the more important things tonight, like a student presentation. And we begin with the April 17th, 2008 minutes. As soon as someone is comfortable with making a motion to approve, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, I'll move to approve the minutes of April 17, 2008.
We have a motion by Ms. Rogers. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Mark Buckman. Any discussion on the April 17, 2008 minutes? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7. Well, we have 2 abstains. Mr. Millar, Mr. Unger abstained, so it's 5-0 on the oral vote. Now we have the April 22nd, 2008 minutes, and there will be no abstentions.
Move approval of the April 22nd minutes.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second by Ms. Rogers. Any comments, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Then finally, we have the April 28th closed session minutes, and it'll be corrected. And is that modification of the motion by Catherine and the second by Chris fine? So with that amendment or that modification, no other comments. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. And after that little bit, we're honored as the board for San Luis Coastal Unified School District to have presented to the audience here and to the board and to the TV audience. This is your opportunity now for the big screen almost. Keon Klukas, Teach Elementary School student and your community service project. Is there any discussion or presentation or anything that you'd like to say before you let the music speak for itself? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Should be on.
You're good.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for welcoming us. My name is Keon Klukas. Before we begin playing, I wanted to tell you a little bit about us and about how we came to play for you this evening. I am a sixth grade student at Teach Elementary School in San Luis Obispo. About 2.5 months ago, the members of my class were given an assignment by my teacher, Mrs. Pudlow. Our assignment required us to form a plan and organize a community action project. The basic intent of the project was to perform some type of outreach to the community. I thought it would be fun to form a quartet with some of my friends and share the music that we enjoy. We recently played at a local retirement home and fulfilled part of this project. We are here tonight to continue this outreach effort. Besides playing for your enjoyment, I hope to accomplish another one of my objectives. I would like to reinforce the importance of musical education in public schools. Since the school board's decisions influence our education, I thought it'd be important to have the board hear what we think about music as part of our education. To prepare for this presentation, I interviewed the following three people. Dr. Bozzo Coricelli is a well-known retired public school education. The following are some of the common themes or important ideas they shared with me. Music is an essential part of all cultures. It is the one language that everybody around the world understands. Music education helps us learn about our culture and other cultures too. Doctors who study the brain have observed that music activates a large area of the brain. Scientists have also proven that without certain vibrations, the body will not function correctly. Many students perform better academically when exposed to music. Music stretches and improves students' minds in unique ways. Some students are drawn to school because of music. Music education can give students the opportunity to discover their musical intelligence. This could be very important for the student who may not excel in other subjects, but does excel in music. Playing in an orchestra or a band, or singing in a choir, may give a student a sense of belonging that they might not find in other classes. Music education is important in many ways. I hope you will support it whenever you have the opportunity. To complete this presentation, my friends and I would like to perform a piece for you that we have been working on. I would like to take a minute and introduce to you the other members of our quartet, the 16 Strings. Leah Coricelli will be playing second violin. She is a sixth grade student at Del Mar Elementary in Morro Bay. Rory McClish is also a sixth grade student at Del Mar Elementary. He will play third violin today. Maurice Barron will be playing cello. Maurice is an eighth grade student at North County Christian School in Atascadero. All of us are members of the Academy Orchestra, which is one of the ensembles that make up the San Luis Obispo Youth Symphony. The piece we'll be playing for you is March by George Friedrich Handel. Thank you for listening to us today.
That was beautiful, and the information, Keown, that you provided was very well constructed, thought out, and very heartfelt. Is there more that you're going to play? I just wanted to make sure that we didn't cut you off. That was very, very beautiful, and I think everyone can speak for themselves that we applaud you for your commitment to music, and I can't agree with you more regarding how important it is, not only for yourself, but also for the entire community. So thank you for bringing this here tonight. And I think there may be...
Mr. Spadafore, before he sneaks out the door, could I just please introduce Maestro Bozzo Coricelli, who is is here because of some of his students, but I'd like to thank him on behalf of all of our children for the Youth Symphony. He started the Youth Symphony.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Catherine, for that. Thank you all very much. And we're going to... And again, thank you. And maybe we could let the students know our appreciation, too, that are still doing that. Thank you. We have a couple of other presentations tonight that are very important and are very well deserved. The next is a community advisory committee, the Golden Apple Special Educator Award for 2008. If you could please come forward. Jackie Kirk Martinez, thank you.
Good evening, board. Is this on? Okay. Good evening. Tonight, I would like to present to you who's going to present the Golden Apple Award tonight. Naomi Blakely, part of the CAC and part of our district, as well as Michelle Ronzon and her son, Matthew.
Good evening. The Community Advisory Committee is a group of parents, educators, and community members who are involved with the educational needs of children with disabilities. The CAC serves in an advisory capacity to the SELPA regarding community opinions, concerns, and suggestions. We strive to raise community consciousness of special education and to increase community acceptance in the difference of learning styles and the need for educational and vocational provisions to accommodate these differences.
And my name is Michelle. This is my son, Matthew. He's 8. He is in the second grade, special day class, and mainstreamed. He splits the two. So myself, as a parent of a child with special needs, I'm honored to present the Golden Apple Award this evening. This award is going to a teacher whom I've had the privilege to watch in action for the past 2 years. I have seen a great deal of kids have consistency. So now we as parents are able to create a continuum from school to home. Another parent commented on how respectful this teacher is when concerns come up about their child's interactions with peers at school. They said how professional she was at handling the situation and helpful in finding a solution to the issues. I personally could go on with many more things to say about this teacher, but now I would like to recognize and honor her with the Golden Apple Award. Mrs. Donnelly, would you please come to accept? Mrs. Donnelly, we would like for you to accept this award and know how much we appreciate all of what you do for us, our children, and our community. And as Naomi was pointing out, there were only 5 awards given in the entire county. And in the past, we have given one. Each district had a winner. And this year, the committee has changed to some districts only had one recipient come in. So we chose to give out 5 awards to the ones with the most outstanding applications. So, Mrs. Tinelli, thank you so much for all you do. Jennifer Dinelli's name will be on a plaque in the district office also.
I just want to say thank you. It's been such an honor to have the opportunity and the privilege to work with such amazing kids every day, and the parents I have in my classroom. I just feel so supported, and to work in a district where the staff is so supportive at the school. Baywood is just an incredible school to be at, and the special ed programs there are amazing. Our principal's amazing, and all of the support staff. And so I just want to say thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for that presentation to Naomi Michelle. Thank you very much. Next, we have another presentation we're fortunate to have, and I think Rick
Seitz as Teacher of the Year candidates, and I want to give a little recognition to each of them. Dr. Valentine has some certificates, but maybe if President Spadafore, maybe you can come around to the front and Dr. Valentine, and I'll just have the individuals come up one at a time so we can I can share a little bit about them and have some recognition. And our first nominee for Teacher of the Year is from Laguna Middle School, Kathy Ahern. Kathy, why don't you come on up? Kathy's no stranger to the school district. She's been a summer school administrator for the last couple of years, but this is her first year full-time as a teacher in San Luis Coastal, which really says a great deal about her impact on Laguna Middle School, to be recognized for her excellence this soon in her career with us. Kathy runs the English Language Development Program there. She teaches leadership, advises the ASB program, is extremely enthusiastic and creative, and she has also committed herself to very specific goals in the organization she's part of with her English Language Advisory Council, which she runs. She's committed herself to parent education, which we know is something we heard a lot about last week at the ELD meeting. Her focus with ASB has largely been with community service, and she makes great cookies. So, Kathy Ahern. From Bishop's Peak Elementary School, Tom Boyle. So if Kathy is one of our newbies, Tom is a true veteran. In his 35 years of teaching, 25 in San Luis Coastal, Tom has truly had an impact on hundreds and, well, actually maybe thousands of students' lives. He has taught various grade levels at C.L. Smith and Bishop's Peak schools. He's been a Level 3 CTAP technology mentor, a master teacher for many, many student teachers over the years, served on curriculum council, held various leadership positions within the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, served on grant committees, and who knows what else. Those are the things I know about. He was a master of differentiated instruction long before it became a popular idea. And all of us who know Tom know that he has a great mind. His students, colleagues, and administrators are challenged by his abilities to think outside of the box, and we are all better for it. Tom has served the district and his students well. In kindergarten wing, you have heard the delightful squeals of students toward the Queen of Kinder en Español. Daria has been in the district as long as I have. I think we came exactly the same time, about 13 or 14 years, and has had an indelible impact on the success and development of the two-way immersion program at Pacheco, one of the founders. From day one, she has been a true ambassador and the face of the program as students start there. We know how daunting day one of kindergarten can be. So imagine being an English-only speaking 5-year-old and hearing nothing but Spanish from day one. no problem, because the smile and open arms of Daria makes it all work. She has presented at the California Association for Bilingual Education for the past 20 years, teaches graduate programs at Cal Poly and kindergarten in our district, and has mentored many, many student teachers. Daria Hernandez. We have an individual who is not able to make it here tonight, and I think it actually speaks to some of her commitments, Karen O'Donnell from Los Osos Middle School. So she's not here tonight to really receive some. I want to say a couple things about her. Karen has taught special education at Los Osos Middle School for the past 4 years. And if you know Karen, and I actually have the privilege of knowing her quite well, I've done a lot of camping with her family, then it is so apparent that she is tailor-made for the special work that she does. She is so dedicated to the children and families that she serves. She is constantly seeking to truly individualize her instruction and strategies to the specific needs of her charges. She makes sure that her students have total access to all that the school community has to offer, and she has teamed regularly with regular education classes to ensure access to the curriculum. She is the region president of the California Association of Resource Specialists, and that's where she is tonight, serving her president's role with that with the CARS group. And I know the staff and even myself have been the recipient of the best baked muffins money can't buy. So Karen O'Donnell from Los Osos Middle School. From Hawthorne Elementary School, Susan Pacheco. Susan wears many hats, and this is not in just a figurative sense. For the last 11 years in the district, Susan actually puts on her many hats to illustrate and transition in her classroom. She has a verb hat, a wizard hat, an explorer hat, a science lab hat. Susan is a recent winner of the county writing contest. We have a faculty portion, and for her personal narrative, I think it was, won an award. So, Susan Pacheco. From Morro Bay High School, Scott Scaldi. So the board will remember that Scott was up here a couple of weeks ago sharing the benefits of Morro Bay High School's professional collaboration model. But I would venture to guess that Scott could instruct us and fill us in on a wide range of topics. We were fortunate to pick up, and I didn't use Dr. Valentine doesn't like me to say steal from other districts. We were fortunate to pick up Scott a couple of years ago, and since that time, he has taught advanced placement American government, regular American government, U.S. history, world history, run the entire AVID program, Peer Helping 1, Peer Helping 2, is the ASB leadership advisor at Morro Bay High School, taught summer school, served on the management team. So I think we're getting our money's worth. Scott is a gifted teacher, an excellent speaker, and a kid magnet, and he is passionate about teaching and learning. When you see him working with high school students of all types and abilities, you know that life-changing connections are made. Scott Scaldi. We do have the daunting task of selecting one Teacher of the Year, and that actually is done primarily by a committee made up of former Teachers of the Year. And so for our presentation of Teacher of the Year for San Luis Coastal, I'd like to introduce the principal of San Luis Obispo High School, Will Jones.
Good evening, everyone. It's truly an honor to be able to award Nancy Santoyani with this special recognition tonight. And first of all, before I talk about Nancy, all of her peers from the Special Education Department at San Luis Obispo High School are here tonight to help recognize her. And they are truly one of the best teams we have at our school. So I'd like to have all of her peers in her department stand and be recognized as well, please. And what I'm about to read are actually comments that are made primarily by them, so it's an honor to be able to represent them as well. Nancy has been working at San Luis Obispo with all types of learning disabilities. She's able to modify her curriculum for all students to be successful. While math and computers are her primary areas of expertise, she also teaches a challenging reading class for students significantly below grade level. Nancy is one of those here after 5 p.m. teachers who is always willing to go the extra mile for her students. The entire special education staff, as well as the regular staff, is in awe of Nancy and her ability to succeed with challenging students. Co-workers go to her for materials and ideas about lesson plans, as well as information on writing IEPs. Parents and students admire and trust Mrs. Santoyani Nancy's and appreciate that she reaches out to them at home. Her professionalism is admired by all. She has received the Golden Apple Award as Outstanding Special Education Teacher in the District, an award presented by the parents of special needs students. Nancy rarely gets ruffled. She is articulate in the most stressful situations. In the classroom, she makes her expectations clear to her students, and she also clearly explains IEPs and the various facets of those to students and parents. And I've been in IEPs where Nancy has done that, and in some cases, it would take a PhD to get it right, and she is very successful at that. She is more than just a teacher with a single assignment. She has multiple preps each trimester and works long hours with a positive attitude. She supplements her instruction with interesting and relevant material that engages her students and creates great incentive programs for her students as well, and I've seen that in action. Her enthusiasm for teaching and learning definitely inspires her students to succeed. Her brilliance, heart, dedication, initiative, and love for her students and profession make Nancy special as a teacher. She is constantly seeking opportunities to improve her own skills and to provide more expertise and interest for her students. She is innovative and fun, as well as giving and positive to everyone. We are more than fortunate to have her on our staff at San Luis Obispo High School. And, oh, by the way, this morning at 11 minutes after 7, Nancy's daughter, Melissa, gave birth to Nancy's first grandson, Anthony Patrick. Ladies and gentlemen, Nancy Santoyani. Come on up here. It's time. Come on up.
Okay, is this the right one?
Oh, my goodness.
I think we have enough in front of
you. You stole my opening line.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I like to share.
Okay, this is for you.
Oh, my gosh, all the letters are there. It's spelled correctly.
I feel like I should, you know, have eyes in the back of my head because you're there and you're there. Life is definitely full of surprises. And as a few of you know, I was not in front of my students this morning because I spent 18 hours last night at Sierra Vista Hospital awaiting the morning birth of our first grandson. Grandchild. Other surprises have come along. When I first stepped on foot on the SLO High campus in 1999, I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't know where it would lead me, and here I am. What can I say? During my first interview, Will Jones was part of the interview committee. He and Dave Horsey, the previous principal, were very, very supportive, and I joined the staff there. And Dave and Will have both assembled the most incredible, greatest faculty and staff on earth. I can't say enough about these people. Bonnie Parsons, our site administrator. It's amazing to work with these people, and the amount of respect and trust that we have is tremendous. When I first started in special ed, I spent a great deal of time in Julie Mamo Beckius's classroom and in Patsy Reed's classroom, and I owe a great deal to both of these special educators. And Patsy graciously agreed to be my bitseminar for 2 years. That's quite a time commitment. The beauty of being a special educator is that we get to determine exactly what a student needs, meet them right there, wherever that is, design instruction to help them be successful and to progress from there. I mean, what could be better? Sounds good on paper, but it can be tricky. When students enter my classroom, there's nothing more rewarding than to see 9th and 10th graders come to me who generally despise mathematics and, for the most part, haven't seen a great deal of success. I take that on as a personal challenge when they enter my classroom. To turn that attitude around, to make them take on the I can do this attitude. When they enter my classroom, we are family. We're in this together. And there's nothing better than to be able to teach somebody mathematics and get them to actually like it. It's so fun. Equations using the quadratic formula. It just blows my mind. It's really, really, really fun. And in closing, I'd like to say it's one thing to have a passion for something and to come away with an intrinsic feeling of a job well done, but it's something entirely different to be publicly recognized for it. And I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart.
Has some comments that we appreciate so much what all of the honorees tonight represent, not only in their own commitment to the students, but also all the teachers of the district, because I think everybody here represents all the good that public education provides through every teacher and every classroom for all our students at each point in their lives. So thank you all very much, and reckon we'll take a break after this.
And I just want to add that Nancy's name will be forwarded to the county for recognition with all the other teachers from the various school district as our nominee for County Teacher of the Year. And we do have some refreshments now. So thank you.
Table, we'll start again. We'll resume as Chris walks back to the table, the board meeting for tonight. We're going to next have Chelsea Parker from San Luis Obispo High School, please. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Before we do that, is there anyone here from the public that would like to address the board during the public comment session? Okay. Seeing none, not that I knew that ahead of time. We'll move right on. And Chelsea Parker, thank you for being here. And can you tell us what is new and up with San Luis Obispo High School?
Yeah. Well, there is a ton of new academic awards. We have our huge Golden Tiger Banquet on May 21st, paired speech. Our Ag Issues team won, which included Emily Johnston, Aubrey Whitaker, Leslie Buckingham, Aaron Flores, and Jordan Ratliff. And also our Novice Parliamentary Procedure team was a state champion, and that included Berkeley Johnson, Adriana Kaplan, Jesse Paletti, Kenna Lewis, Elizabeth Martin, Bailey Rydell, Alex Atala, and Chelsea Hathaway. And our Black and Gold, which is our sports awards, are on May 22nd, right after Golden Tigers. And some of our spring sports, we had two Pac-7 champions, boys swimming and boys golf, and 8 of our 9 teams qualified for CIF, which was really exciting. And we completed our STAR testing, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and I didn't have to take it, so I got to sleep in every day. So nice. And we also had our this week is our high school exit exam makeup, and the sophomores or whatever age you are already took them, so I don't know if they did good or whatever. Hopefully they passed. We also have AP testing this week and next week for all of our AP classes, and our SATs was last Saturday, the morning of prom, which sucked for the juniors, but I had to deal with it last year, so they get to suffer this year. But prom was on Saturday, and it was Beyond the Bamboo. So they took us overseas, I don't know. It was kind of weird, but it turned out really well. They had some Cal Poly students build a huge, like, archway when you walked in, and they had, like, Christmas lights, like, white Christmas lights around the dance floor, and just, it was really nice. And our open house is tomorrow at 6:30, and our breakfast club is tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., in our cafeteria, because it's Teacher Appreciation Week, and the sophomores baked our teachers cupcakes, which we got so many compliments. We've put goodie bags in their boxes, and we've gotten so many compliments on them, and we're just trying to go above and beyond this year, because I know in the past, not all teachers have been appreciated that much. And our 24-hour relay is on May 24th. It's come in on May 27th, and everyone's looking forward to that because we want to, I don't know, it's just fun to have a yearbook. And we had voting last week for class presidents and some of our new members. Our new ASB president is Hannah Moore, and our class presidents, the senior class president is Aaron May, the junior is Keely Quasigro, and the sophomore one is Randy Lee. And I'm currently doing the voting at Laguna Middle School for our freshman thing. I'm going there tomorrow to help them out, finish that. And then I think that's it. But that's about, there's a ton of stuff going on in May. ASB's stressing.
Thank you, Chelsea. You know, it's always wonderful to have you come by, the enthusiasm for everything that you're, and being a senior this year, I can tell you're excited, and the sympathy that you have for the underclassmen, for all of the things they're going through, I think is touching. But thank you for, obviously, for bringing and coming.
Thank you for having me.
And there are no other students tonight, but it's time for administrators and board members for any reports. Who would like to start? Catherine?
I did attend the Farm to School program seminar that was at the adult school last Thursday, and was very happy to see that many food service coordinators, in fact all of them from our local area, were there, including our own Sue Thorson, and want you to know that we have currently at our salad bars, we do have salad bars at each of our schools, the two locally grown kinds of produce that are offered there are oranges and kiwi, which is actually grown locally. But as a result of that farm-to-school program seminar, Sue tells me that she's actively recruiting local growers to provide lettuce, apples, grapes, broccoli, strawberries, any local produce that can be made affordable in our budget. And she's encouraging any grower, any co-op to contact her and try to work with us to bring that healthful, locally grown produce to our students. She also said she's open to the idea of having, in addition, at our salad bars, as opposed to, in addition to, I should say, the packaged foods that we get through the federal lunch program, to also provide wholesome whole wheat bread and sliced turkey so that kids can make their own sandwich.
First of all, I am very excited. Several years ago, I attended a Safe Routes to School meeting that the city, county, and a bunch of bike groups, and Kurt Collins and I were there. This was actually before I was on the board. And at that time, Kurt made a commitment, and I know there's other schools in the district that are that have Safe Routes to School. There's been a tremendous, in my neighborhood, I watch when they do the walking school bus go through past my house. But at that time, the city had committed to putting signage up and marking the routes and marking them as a safe route to school. So I'm very excited because Kurt told me yesterday that he has a commitment from the city that after these several years, we will finally get the signs posted. And I think that's going to be a tremendous help and safety measure. I also would like to ask the board, I've been invited to attend a reception for the new president of Cuesta College, and I'd like permission to be able to speak as the representative from the board and say that I'm here on behalf of K-12 education in Cuesta College.
I think that sounds like a good idea. It's Thursday night when there's a board meeting.
It is Thursday
in any
night.
Regard.
And it's an expulsion I need to miss. So.
Yeah. So is everybody okay? Sounds. Thank you for offering to do that.
Thank you.
Chris?
Yeah, and I just want to say I was fortunate enough with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers to go to the Monarch Grove Open House. And there are a bunch of retirees there. We got, I think, six retirees. So I just wanted to recognize Rich and Carol Gunther. Rich was my son's fifth grade teacher. Great guy. Really a good guy. George Nichols, Sammy Corey, longtime first and second grade teacher there. George has taught third, fourth grade. Mick Aldworth, who he was my son's fourth grade teacher, so I'm seeing all these people that were my son's teachers resigning. And Mick was a renowned practical joker. Retiring. Did I say resigning? Retiring. Mick was a renowned practical joker, and he would play practical jokes on his teacher, his compadre next door. And I'm not going to share any of his secrets because he'd probably get in. Be forced to resign, but no, it was great. And then Linda Schmeling, who was a longtime fourth grade teacher at Monarch Grove, and Linda used to do the gold rush at the open house.
Of the issue regarding teaching someone who doesn't speak English, the what's involved, not only understanding where their educational ability lies and when they come to this country, what the challenges are for that, and I think our study session spoke quite well to some of the issues I heard, and that was a good session.
Can I just
and Chris?
And I just wanted to say I will not be here at our next Tuesday regular board meeting. That's our legislative action time for both Tri-County's Education Coalition and the School Board Association. We'll be knocking on legislator doors, talking to them about the school budget and the governor's proposed budget chainsaw, we'll be taking the message that we don't want our children heard. And I would invite everybody who's watching tonight to be sure to go to SaveSlowCountySchools.org, which is the website that was created by Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Plourd, which will allow you an easy way to get in contact with your legislators and let them know that you'd like to see a budget that reflects the best interests of our children.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Any other comments by board staff or administrators? Okay. Seeing none, I believe that Mr. Miller will walk us through the latest chapter of the state budget.
Well, you know, if there had been a new chapter written, we would walk through it, but there hasn't been hardly anything or of substance that's happened in Sacramento for several weeks now. The only information that might be enlightening to the board is two things. One, there was a survey done of likely voters in the state of California, and it shows overwhelming support for education. The majority of those surveyed wanted to protect education from any cuts whatsoever based upon the current state crisis. The second item of note is that the receipts from income tax are out now. So the April revenues for the state of California are actually beating the estimates. And this is the first upbeat news that's come about state revenues in many, many months. The excess revenues over estimates is about $1.2 billion. And that $1.2 billion is equal to the lost estimates of the previous 3 months. It doesn't go nearly to the distance that's necessary in order to equalize the deficit of the budget. The deficit of the budget is still in excess of May and June budget talks that the state of California will engage in. Our next big informational piece that we expect to know some information from, we're hopeful, is the May revise, which Ed and I will be going to Santa Barbara on, I think it's May 19th, in order to gain some insights about what's going on. That's also the night of a board meeting. We'll be back. We'll report what's happening then.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Seeing none, then we'll move to item number 5, since we had adjusted the agenda tonight, which is acceptance of the 2008-2009 personnel commission budget and the notice of a public hearing that Mr. Robinette will share with us?
Thank you. There's really no information to share other than any questions you might have about the Personnel Commission budget. It is a budget that you adopt to support the Personnel Commission's actions, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those.
Thank you for the directness of that introduction. I appreciate it. Questions, Mr. Millar?
And I'm hard-pressed to not spoil your succinctness. Just explain the funding for the District Personnel Administrator, and that would be you, isn't it?
That is me.
So 60% we fund your position and 40% the Personnel Commission funds your position?
That's correct. Okay. I'm actually, it's an interesting thing, I'm hired by both of you, and I serve both the classified employees per the Personnel Commission and the rest of the district for you guys.
Oh, well, and you're doing an excellent job, and I want you to know I appreciated your presentation of our employees this evening. Was very good.
Thank you.
And the 60% that we receive, it seems like much more. Thank you.
Very good.
Any other questions on that, Mark?
If I can, I think it's along the same lines. As I look down and I look at the secretary clerk analyst at the 2400, mm-hmm. My question is that a percent of people, or are there full-time staff serving the Personnel Commission?
Yeah, that's a percent in every situation except, I take that back. We have one full-time employee for the Personnel Commission, and that is the personnel assistant that serves classified employees. That's currently Nancy Cundy. And so she is a full-time employee for the Personnel
Commission. Part of the Personnel Commission before coming on the board and respect what they do.
Great.
Thank you all for the support. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And
so
that will be on May 28th.
May 28th. I'll attend that meeting. Thank you very much, Rick. Item number six is our budget planning that will be presented by Russell Miller as we move on with that.
Thank you. And tonight we bring you another piece of our budget planning for 2008-2009. I would like to make the note that as we start this discussion, any numbers that you see here almost certainly will change. Everything that we talk about is in a state of flux until we get either to the point where we must make a decision or the state of California is capable of giving us some direction. I would bet a lot of money that we'll be making decisions before we have information in which to base those decisions like we do in most years. However, having said that, we continue to bring forth different ideas and different scenarios for the board to consider in its educational process about this budget. And some of the key elements that we would look forward to having answers to that would help us when we talk about our own individual local budgets is the amount of the cost of living allowance that the state will give districts. There has been some movement up and down, back and forth in that COLA. Sometime in May, hopefully with the May revise from the governor, we'll get a set amount that will come forth and we could start making some decisions. If, in fact, the COLA is given to us and isn't withheld by the state of California, yet to be seen. The amount of cuts, if any, to categorical programs is a huge question for us since that's the only real substantive dollars that we receive from the state of California. As you know, most of our revenues come from locally generated property taxes, yet we do have over $6 million worth of categorical funding that the state of California provides to us in the form of different programs that school sites use to enhance their programs. Mr. Millar?
I was just going to ask, it seems like some of the suggestions that are being floated as far as categoricals are concerned have the real potential to harm us. If they fold stuff into the revenue limit amounts, how does that end up shaking out for us?
What ends up happening is because we don't get a revenue limit, let me back up. Categorical funds traditionally have strings attached or directions tied to them on how it can be spent. If, in fact, the state of California gives districts flexibility on categorical funding, which isn't a bad idea, it could take the form of being folded into the revenue limit. If, in fact, our categorical monies, let's say that we have EIA money that comes to us from the state of California, if that money is folded into a revenue limit, we don't get a revenue limit. We get money from our local sources. We lose every penny of EIA money that would be folded into the revenue limit. So it represents a huge threat and risk to our financial allocations, especially to school sites. EIA is traditionally used to backfill Title I programs. The feds give us Title I money. Doesn't go nearly far enough to do the type of program enhancement that they wanted to do, so we use EIA money. If we lose EIA money, we lose a big part of those kinds of programs. So this flexibility piece, this categorical folded into the revenue limit idea, if it's done in that kind of a way, will represent a huge threat to us. Okay. It could mean $4.5 million worth of revenues that would cease to exist for us. Ms. Dixon?
Mr. Miller, you explained that so well.
Thank you.
I've heard it before, but I really like hearing it each time. If this is
you
probably
want me to do
the
it
best
again?
Yet, I'm saying. But the way you explain it made me think that the state wouldn't have to do it that way. I mean, they could, you say, fold in revenue, I mean, categorical funding with revenue limit, but they could just give them that money and give us our money, the same dollar amounts, and also unrestrict ours.
We wait
say.
To see what will end up
they
happening.
Could set it up that way. There would
they
be
could.
Nothing to preclude that,
but
right?
I wouldn't hold out hope that there will be any kind of special dispensation
right.
made for different kinds of districts. The state does not deal well with anomalies or risk or rare occurrences, I guess. So we would look at an across-the-board allocation, and we would hope that they recognize the damage that it would happen to some districts, and as a result, they will just give us categorical money with no necessary strings attached to it. That would be the best case
that
scenario
would be nice.
For everyone.
Thank you.
Going on real quickly, we would look at, we would need to get some sort of direction about the reductions in revenues to revenue limit districts and whether or not the program, we backfunded them with our own monies in some cases, but we still had to give up to the state certain amounts of money. We asked the question, will the state implement a flexibility options for districts that moves revenues from restrictive programs to revenue limits? We just answered that question. Thank you, Mr. Millar. And what effect will declining property sales and values have on our locally generated property tax revenues? That's huge. For the first time in many, many years, I'm not sure if it's happened before, we see property values going down to the extent that the county tax assessor is actually giving out blanket reassessments on people's property taxes, which could end up costing school districts and city government and county government substantial amounts of revenues. It's written into Prop 13 that should you feel that your property has declined in value below the amount that you purchased it for, you are entitled to file for a reassessment. That reassessment will translate, if in fact it's true, will translate into less property taxes for you to pay. Good thing for individuals, but as a organization that relies on property taxes, it could mean substantial losses of revenues for us. We are not sure how that will affect us. Prop 13 generates a minimum increase of 2%. So that's the amount that can be raised by the assessor each and every year. We built our budget on that 2%. Then subsequently, the assessor came forth with his thinking that he's going to reassess different blocks of properties based upon their purchase price, and we're not sure how that's going to affect us yet.
So the reassessment part of this has a downside, but it's a limited downside. As I understand it, it's homeowners or property owners who purchase a property and after the purchase it decreases. It's not like somebody who's held a property for multiple years and their equity is decreasing. They're not entitled to a reassessment, as I understand it.
No, it has to be since purchasing, and okay. The county assessor has pegged, I think, December 2005 as the date at which the majority of these properties were purchased at a higher value than what they would be today.
And I guess the second part of my question is, will the impact of that potentially be enough to make the 2% assumption unrealistic?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not. But we're not sure what the total dollar value could be. And
myself here. Are you saying that it's possible that we would suffer the loss of our categoricals if the categoricals were rolled into the revenue limits for revenue limit districts, and we could also suffer a further loss, what I wrote was a share of fair share of pain loss, if they reduce the revenue limits for revenue limit districts, we would also have a reduction there. So it's sort of like a double whammy that is the would that, be the worst case scenario?
That's a likely scenario if the state and the legislatures choose to implement a flexibility change in categorical funding. So if they roll it into the revenue limit, there is a certainty that if they roll it into the revenue limit, we will lose that funding, whatever that is. And the worst case on that's $4.5 million, and they could just choose a program to roll into the revenue limit, or they could go a little bit deeper and run all programs into the revenue limit. And then in terms of your second part of your question is, in the past, the state has implemented on basic aid districts a fair share of the pain, and I see no reason to think that they wouldn't do it again. And there would be two hits on us in that case.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the potential rolling of categoricals into the revenue limit. So if we were a revenue limit district, for example, would they give us essentially a block grant of categoricals above our current revenue limit, which would be less than what would be expected because of the reductions, the deficit? And then for a basic aid district, would they say that here's your revenue limit, here's what your categorical should have been, this is your basic aid amount, so you suck it up? A low wealth basic aid district would essentially fall into revenue limit.
Correct.
If their revenue limit plus their categoricals were less than what the funding was.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay.
And put it in a simplified form. Let's say that a district's revenue limit is $5,000 and
right.
the sum total of all categorical programs added another $1,000 to that.
Right.
So it would be $6,000 now. There are many basic aid districts that are their locally generated property taxes are barely above their per student allocation from revenue limits. So as the revenue limit increased, they would not be basic aid anymore. They would be revenue limit because their revenue limit now increased higher than their locally generated property taxes. So yeah, you're absolutely right on that piece.
And we're in the position where the amount of categoricals that we receive added to our revenue limit is less than our basic aid allocation.
And dollars then become flexible to be used in any one of the programs that were combined at your discretion, but they remain categorical and don't affect the revenue limit. And obviously we are hopeful that if flexibility becomes an operational thing, that's the way it goes.
But isn't the notion of flexibility also tied to the understanding that there would be a reduction in categoricals, so we would be trading flexibility for less money? Isn't that the
that's the seductive part of it, is you can get so happy about having flexibility that you forget the fact that it's attached to a cut.
Yeah. Walt?
Dr. Valentine, I noticed that you had recently attended the Schools for Sound Finance event, and I'm wondering what you're hearing. Anybody doing any handicapping on what's likely to happen?
The notion of rolling categoricals into revenue limits is obviously of great concern to basic aid school districts. That concern in the meeting you're describing was downplayed as being one of the less likely scenarios. It was suggested by the... Thanks for helping me, Russell. Anyway,
I'm letting you go. You wanted to talk.
the LAO. but it hasn't seemed to have garnered any traction since then.
I figure I'm in trouble enough as it is. Why not help him along? You're supposed to cover
his this guy. Is why you pack your own parachute. Okay.
Now, there are so many different scenarios and different scenes that you could write on this little drama that's being played out in Sacramento, that at this time, anything you want to talk about is realistic to be talked about, and certainly nothing is out of play until it's actually passed, because the legislature is just famous for, at the last minute, pulling something out of the hat, and you wonder, where did that come from? And you never heard of it before. So it's just it's part of the annual event these days, and I think that Dr. Ballantyne is absolutely correct that the idea of folding the categoricals into the revenue limit is not one that's going to gain a lot of popularity. But for the reason that many legislators love these categorical programs because they can own the dollars that go with it and hold people accountable for how they're spent. So they want to be able to direct how these programs are administered at the local level. And it can change since the last time you saw it. We have some new information about debt service payments. We've updated that. We've updated for placing of previously released temporary teachers back into positions. So now we have actual people identified to actual positions. So any dollars that were allocated as an average or as a standard, we now have specific dollars allocated for those particular positions. And we also went through the exercise of taking the one-time allocations from the previous year's strategic plan and rebudgeting them for this particular upcoming year of 08-09. And the five things that we budgeted on this general fund summary were Pacheco support at $150,000, the RTI, $29,000, professional development, $130,000, autism transition was $50,000, and special education assistive technology was $15,000. We had previously budgeted these three programs as being significant, while one time recognizing that we were going to ask the board that these were three programs that probably ought to be supported should the funding be there. It would be music for grades 1 through 3 at $83,000, PE for grades 1 through 3 at $249,000, and special ed professional development, $43,000. So you will find that all of those things are now included in the budget. And I would like to walk through the budget summary real quickly. And
there might be just one question. Mark, do you want to go?
Actually, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You may answer it as you go. So.
Okay. You want to wait then? Okay. Within the general fund summary, the chart that you see on page 6.2, we talk about significant blocks of numbers. And the first block of numbers depicted by the number one in the right-hand side of this is the revenues. And our total revenues projected for 08-09 will be $68.5 million. The significant portion of that is $56.5 million comes from property taxes. The second part of this are the expenditures. And we would have our certificated salaries of $33 million, classified salaries of $11 million, the employee benefits, including statutorily required payroll deductions, of $12.5 million. Then we get into materials and supplies of $3 million. We have our utilities, operational contracts, and other expenditures. Everything we have here is necessarily going to be the same next week, next month. So while I have great trepidation about presenting any numbers that I know to be somewhat surreal, this is a basis for us to start the discussion about what's important. Ms. Rogers?
Well, Mr. Miller, if we look under, it's bracketed as two, materials and supplies, I'm sure there's just a simple explanation why it was $6 million in 07-08 and projected to be something slightly more than $3 million in 08-09?
Excellent question. And what happens is we always build our budget prior to knowing what the state's going to give us in the terms of categorical funding. When the state gives us categorical money, it almost, well,
The assumption is most of it will be spent in materials and supplies. So what you see on the left-hand side is our second interim. After we've received our categorical funding, it has popped the materials and supplies number up to $6.7 million. What you see on the right-hand side, and I would direct your attention up to the revenue side, the block one, you see the state money is $7.6 million, and on the second interim and on the budget, we're only planning on getting $6.2 million. Well, clearly we'll get more than that, but almost all of that increase will fall within the instructional materials and supplies, thus increasing that amount. So it's an anomaly due to the moment in time.
So the materials and supplies is the lion's share of that is represented by categorical funding.
Thank you, okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. And then I'll direct your attention. Just below our surplus of $950,000, we have our beginning and ending fund balance, which is essentially our savings account. And we divide our savings account up into different segments, which I'll get to in a moment. But our beginning fund balance is projected to be about $8.7 million. And the ending fund balance, after this budget is adopted, which is also a pulled-from-air number, $9.7 million. We'll see what we end up with after we do our total budget adoption. But taking that $9.7 million, we now divide it up into separate savings accounts. And the way that we do that is that the components of the ending fund balance, we put aside the significant amount of 5% of our of that essentially equals $3.6 million. You look to the right of that $72 million and you get $67 million in the budgeted amount, and 5% of that is $3.4 million. Now, once again, these numbers will change, and as the categorical funding occurs, the expenses will go up and the economic reserve will go up additionally.
Okay.
It's just a simple formula.
Give it to me one more time, Russell.
The economic reserve for uncertainty is 5% of a certain number.
And whatever that year's budget is.
Whatever that number is, yeah. It's $72 million on the left and it's $67 million on the right. Thus, it goes down.
I understand it conceptually. I'm just wondering why it wouldn't be interest-bearing. I mean, do we actually have that?
Oh, we earn money on it, sure.
And we earn money on it.
Sure. We earn money on the full $9 million.
Okay.
All we're doing in this exercise is dividing that $9 million up into different segments. And we're saying we're reserving, of that $9 million, we're reserving $3.3 million for economic uncertainties. Now let's go down to the next box, okay? And the next box is the restricted funds that make up a big portion of the $9 million. And we're putting aside all of these carryovers from restricted programs. Example, the second one down is PE teacher incentive grant. We received $105,000 that we didn't spend in that grant. And it is included as a segment of the $9 million, and we recognize it in this little box right here and say that's a savings account for that program. Go down to the middle, and you'll see $1.4 million of instructional materials set aside. That's our textbook purchasing savings account. So we identify, of the $9 million, we're identifying $1.4 million for the purposes of buying textbooks.
Russell, this was one of the questions I had, if I can piggyback on.
Sure, go
Maryland's.
Ahead.
In the column on instructional materials where it shows $1.2 million previous year,
yes.
Did we spend the $1.2? If we did not, does the $1.4 include the $1.2, or
yes.
Is there an additional?
Well, it's 1.2 plus 2.
This is I'm almost embarrassed to ask this one. Restricted lottery in the 07-08 second interim.
Yes.
Is $246,000. And then when you go down to lottery and other, we've got $1.1 million.
Okay.
What happens is the lottery money we receive is divided into two segments. By law, we must put aside a certain percentage of our lottery money for instructional materials. And that's what the 246 growing to 256,000 represents. So we've taken a hunk of our money and identified it by law as instructional material purposes only. The balance of the lottery money is available for unrestricted use. Now, it shows up down at that final box because the board has a policy of holding our lottery money for 1 year to make sure that not only do we receive it, but we know exactly what it is before we go spend it.
So
there was a time many years ago where the amount of money expected for lottery, it was shorted. And a lot of districts got caught having budgeted to spend money they never received. So many districts went to this methodology of safeguarding their budgets by saying, you know what, no matter what we get, it's going into a lockdown account. We don't care how much it is because we're not going to spend it, and we'll hold it for 1 year and spend it in the next year. That's what we do.
In the column on projected revenue, projected budget 2008-2009, the restricted lottery of 256.
Yes.
Is that included in the 1.1, or is that totally separate?
The 1.1 has an amount in it that isn't part of the 256 that when we go to budget it will represent an addition to the 256.
I did not understand that at all.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't.
let me ask the question this way. Would I add the 256 to the 1.1 to get the amount of lottery money we have?
You could do that.
But is that a fair explanation?
Yes, okay. You could do that. That's a simple
explanation. See, that was so simple.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the third box down there.
There was
which
one
is,
more question, though, I think. Oh. Adrian, did you have a question?
Well, mine's more of a summary question. Did you want to go through the whole thing first?
Yeah, let me finish the last two boxes, and then we'll get to that part. One-time revenues, there has been in our history a lot of allocations that we get from that. This is what's left, and we have a total of about $110,000 in those accounts. And then the lottery and other, we've made allocations into these savings accounts for the purposes of locking down money for future uses. We have future lease payments for buses, curriculum development, lottery, MA reimbursement, subtotaling $1.6 million. You add up the four boxes, and I'll go through the numbers, $3.447 million, $3.713 million, $110,000, $1,671,000. You add those up, and you're using up all of your $9 million, except for $745,000. That's undesignated reserve. We don't have a purpose for that attached to any of these explanations, and it's money that's available on a one-time basis, not recurring, that hasn't got a purpose attached to it. In the past, we used that money to finance, fund, or establish programmatic enhancements during the year that we find that we need to do things with. So we've always had that available to, in the middle of the year, after the beginning of the year, sometime during the year, use that money to help enhance different programs. Mrs. Dixon, summary question. Thank you.
Just looking at this, it looks like, it's going to be okay. Things look pretty good. I don't know what's not in here that, we really wanted that's not mentioned, but it seems like, this is pretty much status quo, things we've had in our district. It doesn't show, counselors being laid off or anything like that. But the reason that it looks so good is because we're using up reserves. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, we're not allocating any reserves in this budget.
Okay.
And the way that we determine that is the number that is designated as our surplus. $950,000 is our revenue excess over expenditures. Mm-hmm. So we're in a pretty good position. We have reserves, and we have a surplus. And that's because of the nature of our district. And so you're right. We're not laying off counselors. We're not cutting programs. We're actually trying to put together a budget which is a rollover from the previous years, keeping a status quo. There are several things in here which don't have enhancements to them, and a primary, mm-hmm. I'll say it again and again, then mm-hmm. we don't want to get into any kind of obligations for which we don't know our ability to fund future needs. So we'll be very cautious about that piece.
So there's no like really new programs in here, but we're everything Correct. That we've had in the past is represented in this budget.
Correct.
That seems like good news.
Compared to several districts, yes, it's not bad news, that's for sure.
Russell, on the revenue portion,
yes,
the local, what comprises the local revenue?
Local revenues primarily, right now, the big part of that would be interest income, the earnings from our savings accounts and other things. There would be donations that we budget.
Is our lease income included
yes,
in that?
Yes, thank you. The lease income is in there from the unused school sites.
Okay, I was curious. The first three items under revenue really are tax-based?
Yes.
Would it be more accurate to show, instead of using the word local, kind of designate that separately from the tax base as district revenue? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
instead, showing it instead of a tax base that we get, it's something that's generated within the district and is based upon different scenarios or
yeah,
different settings.
It's identified local as district. I think the local comes from the statewide generic term, and everybody in the state uses this same. It's called the state accounting. What is it?
Code system.
Thank you. SACS. And SACS has these numbers attached to it.
Yeah, because I was thinking it would be nice for the public to realize that 4 million or the 3.14 is actually not tax based, but it's something that's managed by the district.
That's absolutely correct.
To add to our revenue side,
mall money, all of those kinds of revenues that we talked about a couple of meetings ago, the enhanced revenues, they're found a lot in the local revenues.
Yes, thank you. Your good stewardship. Thank you. Any other questions or any other comments?
No more comments.
Questions? We look good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next item is item number 7, I believe. Or you have a question?
Well, I just want to thank you for your patience, Russell, because even given that I sat with you yesterday and went over all this material, yesterday, I still had questions in areas that I didn't understand, so I appreciate your patience with me.
That's that they derived from the session. Ask additional questions, provide suggestion and direction to the district, and we turn that over to you to provide that. There are some sample questions included to prompt the discussion.
You know, before I recognize Chris, he has his light on. Was there any information or any questions, particularly from the sites, that you received?
Didn't receive those. We did publish what came forward from the work tables during the session itself that Marilyn had recorded, and have shared that with the board in the update.
Okay, thank you. Chris?
Yeah, I've got three things I'm interested in. One of the things that really popped out for me was, I believe it was the 34% of secondary teachers that were SADAI trained, significantly lower than our elementary teachers, and I'd like to know what our plans are for that. I noticed that was one of the things that we were going to be addressing in our LEA plan. Was it the SADAI, right, wasn't it? Or was it the CLAD?
Yeah, there are a variety of ways to become
right.
authorized to teach ELs, and
right.
you've
yeah.
shared several of them.
Okay. And then the second thing I'm curious about is when we actually do the revision of the LEA plan, if you'll come and explain that to us and what the significance of that would be and what some of those actions would be and the steps would be for that. And then finally, the other thing I'm curious about is the targets seem to be moving, and next year's target will be greater than this year's target. What's that going to look like, and are we essentially in a death spiral because of the increasing targets that we have?
Thanks, Chris.
Did you want answers to any of those?
If you have answers for them, great. I put them out there as things for that I'd be curious about.
Yeah, I think the moving target piece is an excellent one. I think the prospect for school districts that are in program improvement over English Learner is not that there will be less in program improvement in the future, but in fact that there will be more in program improvement. The bar is moving more rapidly, I think, than school districts and than we are going to be able to achieve as the years go toward 2014, when 100% of all students and all subgroups are to be proficient or advanced. That said, I think we have to kind of park that.
When we discussed advanced agenda, we have a study session, we have this follow-up period where questions are asked or items are discussed. Will we come back to the board? Will there be an item back to the board, say, in November, where answers to some of the questions raised and a discussion about the progress or the changes being made with the EL program? Because I know we don't have all the answers tonight.
We would welcome that, because I think keeping this topic in the front of us and in front of the school district gives us momentum and inspiration to pay very, very close attention to
so
this.
So we don't need to expect all the answers tonight, then we can revisit this on an agenda item.
Exactly,
later in
and
the
we
year.
we will suggest revisiting, and you will suggest revisiting, and we will revisit.
Okay, Walt.
Thank you. First, I want to compliment Dr. Matakovich for the way the study session was structured. I thought it was very innovative and seemed to work very well, and other staff who may have been involved in that. Rita out there. Oh, there she is. And the translator was the hardest working person in the room. I don't think Dr. Valentine and Mrs. Roger realized they were going to have quite so much airtime. I watched a little of the replay. So every time she had to translate, you guys were on television. So the one thing that struck me is and I brought this up at the end of the session, I have to say I didn't receive any input from anybody, even though I asked for it. We have some pretty specific things that we wanted to implement our long-term plan on EL learners. Among them, and I'm not getting the details right, but every student will be met by, you know, those that list of things. And I'm really curious. That seems to me kind of like a report card list that would really be helpful for the board if we could get some feedback on how, as an organization, we're meeting those benchmarks that we set up for ourselves in the long-term plan.
And we'd be happy to provide that. We provided some initial feedback to that in the update, and we can certainly republish that as well.
Adrian.
I thought it was a great study session, too. And thank you to Mrs. Delka Scamp. Three syllables, Delka Scamp, and Dr. Matakovich. We have such great names right here. One thing I thought that came out was Stephen Krashen. I remember when I was studying that for my CLAD, idea about how long it takes to be able to speak a language well enough for academic purposes, and the minimum is 7 years. Questions that we had brought were, you know, what's working and what's not working, and that came up in the study session too, where people talked about what are other districts doing, or, you know, what about this or that, and I think that's going to be addressed in what Mr. Spadafore was saying. There's another great name. What Mr. Spadafore was saying about some report, but that would happen, does that happen like on site or district level, or whether those kind of questions percolate longer, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of coming back and revisiting this, is that we can start talking about the benchmarks that we achieve. I was just going to add also to the 5 and 7 year piece, you have to take into account not just 5 to 7 years to become academically fluent in a second language, but how much learning do you have to struggle with over 5 to 7 years so that your academic performance needs to be addressed, as well as your fluency issues need to be addressed.
Okay. Mark and then Catherine.
Thank you. I also would like to thank the administration for the presentation. It was very informative. I thought it was well done. In the material that we got, there were areas that you identified as as needing improvement. I would like to know that we'll see those coming back and activities that will be occurring to address those, because I think they were right on target. One that I didn't necessarily hear, or maybe I missed, and it was, did we identify a need to hire bilingual teachers to make that a priority? I don't need an answer tonight. I just, this is a question that I came up with. Second, I was at first interested in, and then maybe worried about, the summer testing of EL students and doing it all during the summer. And is there an impact on families and parents where they have to, they are being singled out to do their testing during the summer? And do we do that in other programs where we say, well, we have this testing we have to do, but you have to give up your time during the summer to come in and take the test, and whether that's appropriate?
I think if I could respond to that one, Mark, I think part of the issue is that by testing during the school year,
are we asking them to give up part of their summers, and even giving up part of your summer may be too much. So I just want to look and know that we're not making a burden on families, that this is their summer vacation time just like anybody else's, and yet we're asking them to come in. I appreciate the fact that it could take away from learning time, but I don't want to single out a certain group as being, you must take your test during the summer. So just a little more research on that. I'll cut back on some of this. The attendance, there was a large portion of the material was on staff development, and it looked very comprehensive. But as I went back and looked at it again recently, because I didn't turn it into Kim, I snuck it home. Is that mandatory? Is that staff development mandatory? Or is that something that they can come and go as they please? Okay. getting the mandatory sign. And then the last part, I had some concerns about the parents, and I know that's one of the things you're going to address, so I'll wait on that to see how that goes. But one of the things that excited me a lot was hearing about the Pacheco Homework Club and how successful it was. But the majority of the students, the EL students, what I remember, are attending other school sites. And do we have a way to replicate the Pacheco Homework Club, or do we replicate it at other school sites if it's so successful? So those are my 22 questions.
Catherine?
Thanks. I happen to be seated at a table with three seventh grade students who, one of whom had gone through Pacheco kindergarten through sixth grade, and the other two had gone through Hawthorne. And the young lady who was had gone through the Pacheco program for 7 years was still an English language learner in middle school, and the other two were completely immersed in English from kindergarten on at Hawthorne and were completely fluent in both English and Spanish in seventh grade. And it raised for me a concern that we might need to look at this much-loved dual immersion program that we have and really disassemble it and look at, is it working as well for our English learners as we would hope that it would work? Walt, I thought, eloquently phrased the question that was in my mind, which was, I know that are fluent in English and Spanish, and we have an increasing number of students elsewhere in the county, and fewer and fewer students, it sounds like, well, not fewer and fewer, but only a third of those students who are at Pacheco. It seems like so many students in the district could benefit from those teachers and that instruction there. So I would hope that we would have an opportunity to just really sort of, in some ways, look at it anew, as sacrilegious as it is to say that, and see if there's a way to better use our resources there to benefit our English language students.
Thank you. Yeah, then go ahead, Dr. Valentine, do you want to, yeah. And then we'll go. And then I was going to add something to that very briefly, but.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that, and I think that's something that we really have to look at. Anytime you're dealing with a program for English learners, there are there are variables within the variables. For instance, the term English learner itself isn't a constant from one place to another. And I think something that's useful to know is what level of English proficiency is typical of the Pacheco English learner compared to what level of English proficiency, entry level of English proficiency, is typical at other schools. The second piece of it is that I think the research, and again, John was referring to a conference we went to, is fairly uniform in suggesting that the dual language immersion has the greatest potential for providing a powerful English learner program. But saying that, the execution of the program is where all of those benefits will either be derived or not derived. And I think the notion of examining how we deliver the program in addition to whether we deliver the program would be a very profitable discussion.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Adrian.
I thought it was so great to have the students speaking. I do think three students is too small of a research group to draw conclusions. And there's a benefit to, and another thing they couldn't look at really is the proficiency in English and Spanish, the level of reading, writing proficiency, not just fluency in speech. That's another part of that picture. But, we could even look at percentages. It's 50-50, right? And like upper grades and maybe it needs to be a little more in English by upper grades or something. I don't know. You could just tweak things like that to give the English learners a little more English.
Before Chris mentions or makes a comment, I was going to say that at one of the conferences that
all the information that we get yearly from Pacheco, the ongoing studies that are done by San Jose State, and that's something that I think will be presented probably. I think we typically get that in the fall, and that's really instructive. It was refreshing to see Mr. Mayfield's comments, or to listen to Mr. Mayfield's comments about his wanting to make the program as successful as possible and not being satisfied with some of the results that he's seeing, and dedicating himself to making Pacheco as successful a school as is possible. And so I would applaud Mr. Mayfield for continuing to look at how to make us what I think has been a pretty successful program even more successful.
And Dr. Valentine?
If I could just add one more thing. I think that if we're really going to tackle this English learner problem, nothing should be sacred and accepted simply because we're told it's acceptable. We need to take a look at the results, and we need to take a look at our methodologies within that to see what it is that we can do to shore things up. I don't want to protect Pacheco for its own sake. I don't want to jeopardize it for any reason at all, but I think the examination of the program and how it works for English learners is a completely legitimate question.
Marilyn?
Well, off Pacheco and onto my own thoughts, I spoke to Dr. Matakovich and Dr. Valentine. I really enjoyed the study session. I learned a lot from it. I loved that parents were there and that parents felt able to speak, and that the students were there and they felt able to speak. It was very giving, and I felt that there was a buy-in. Everybody had a buy-in, and that was sort of palpable to me. But I went home and I felt like, oh, I've got to solve this English language problem. And, of course, I can't solve it, but I had two ideas, which I shared previously, so I would just throw them out there for into the mix. One was possibly the utilization of surplus technology, surplus computers that we might have that perhaps, though they're no longer able to be used on our system, could be used at home by English language learners, particularly if they're supported by where you would partner kids up, and the English language speaker would have the added benefit of learning some Spanish, and the Spanish language speaker would have their English reinforced by working with another student. So those were my two thoughts about it.
And Walt?
Just as a closing comment, my 30-year-old law enforcement Spanish had improved by quantum leaps just by going through that study session. It was amazing. Listening to the translations, you know, I was amazed at how much I could kind of follow what was going on. So
you're ready to get back on the beat?
I was going to birdwalk for 1 second. After the study session, I had a dream. The dream was in Spanish. The Spanish was coming at me too fast to understand. I woke up and tried to figure out how can you generate a foreign language sufficiently rapidly that you don't understand it when it's you that's doing it. It was a thought.
Mm-hmm. Change the station on your radio when you wake up.
And then just some last comments. This is information that I picked up in San Jose at that seminar that Dr. Valentine and I went to. Two of the school districts that I spoke to, one in Salinas and the other one I can't remember right now, had found that Whittier School District was far advanced than they were at that point. And I don't know how you compare districts at times, but they sent teams of people to Whittier School District because they found that the types of assessments they were doing, the types of support staff they had created, and the types of programs were role models for what they were trying to do. So if there's any benefit to having someone contact Whittier School District, which has been recognized by these other schools as being a model, a role model, that was one thing I heard. The other thing was collaboration was mentioned again in San Jose. Some schools had weekly collaborations among the EL teachers. Some had every other week, so it's back into what we're trying to do. The school districts up there were talking about creating assessments other than the tests, so they could advise the students that they were progressing. It was becoming creative with assessments to say, although the test scores aren't what NCLB requires, we know you're improving because we see this. And the other thing they mentioned were more resource teachers, or having resource teachers at the sites geared towards the EL program. And of course, I didn't know exactly, said that that proved to be highly motivating for young students and older students because it recognized their achievement, even though they were still in that group that was below what NCLB found. And then the last thing that I heard was, in the classroom, small groups of students working together were better than teacher-directed lesson planning. So when they broke kids up into small groups, they found that there was more discussion, there was more energy, and that the kids seemed to be responding. And this was something that came out of those sessions, which I thought was amazing. Any other, Dr. Valentine?
Just very quickly, we'll be discussing it at our principal's meeting next Tuesday. A set of English learner objectives that I think are common sense based rather than being so sophisticated that they're beyond the reach without tremendous professional development effort, which I think is important as well. But I think it's really important that we capture the fundamentals and we do the fundamentals each and every day for our kids. The one thing that I thought also from the conference that we attended that impacts us is that having low concentrations of English learners in a classroom is a very different instructional challenge than having high concentrations of English learners in the classrooms, specifically regarding how much and what percentage of the instruction can be specifically focused and tailored to children changes when you're focusing on a majority of your students to focusing on a distinct minority. The issue then becomes one of how to differentiate instruction in a classroom that has diversity in it.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, I think that the presentation, as we've all said, was terrific and a great point to examine and move forward with that. We'll move on to the next item. No other questions, and that'll take us back up to the two resolutions. First, resolution number 3. Which will be presented by Rick Robinette, please. Thank you.
Yes, the state legislature has designated next Wednesday, May 14th, as the Day of the Teacher. And as we honored our Teachers of the Year tonight, it's appropriate for the board to adopt this resolution.
Okay, thank you. And I was thinking we had started this program or this process of reading the resolution into the record so the public can hear that. And I was thinking, if it was okay with the rest of the board, that our one classroom
interest in and concern they have for our students. And whereas our teachers frequently and often selflessly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students. And whereas, along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement towards helping students become tomorrow's leaders. And whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge, as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations. And whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers. And whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now, therefore, be it resolved, the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 14, 2008 as Day of the Teacher and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation.
And in light of that resolution, Ms. Dickinson, do you have a motion you'd like to make?
I move that we pass this resolution.
And is there a second?
As the father of a school teacher, I'll second that.
We have a second by Mr. Millar. The motion is made by Adrian and seconded by Walt. This is a roll count vote.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafor?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers? The resolution is adopted 6-0, and Mrs. Roger is absent at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. And then the next resolution, Mr. Robinette, please. Thank you.
Between now and the next time we meet, we also have a week that's been designated by the state legislature as Classified School Employee Week. We actually have a school board meeting during that week on the 20th where we will be recognizing some of our classified employees as we continue our month of employee recognition. But this is a resolution.
School employees provide valuable services to the schools and students of the district, and whereas classified school employees contribute to the establishment and promotion of a positive instructional environment, and whereas classified school employees serve a vital role in providing for the welfare and safety of the district students, and whereas classified employees employed by the district and represented by California School Employees Association, CSEA, and Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and confidential employee units strive for excellence in all areas relative to the educational community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District hereby recognizes and wishes to honor the contribution of the classified school employees to quality education in the state of California and in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and declares the week of May 18th through 24th, 2008, as Classified School Employee Week. And I'd like to move approval of resolution number 140708.
I'll second.
Okay, and that's a move by Chris Unger and seconded by Catherine Eisenreth Roger. We'll have a roll vote. Roll call again, please, Ms. Holmes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenreth Rogers? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafor?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
And the resolution passes 6-0.
Thank you. We'll move on to action consent. I'll call the item A through 15, and if any board member wishes to have one pull, please indicate that. Item number 8, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 9, acceptance of donations. Item number 10, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 11, approval of purchase orders. Item 12, approval of warrants and payroll. I have to pull that because my wife is being paid something in that, and I have to abstain. Item 13, approval of bilingual test waiver. Item 14, approval of out-of-state field study trip, the Skills USA National Competition in Kansas City, Missouri. Item 15, approval of the 2008-2009 Carl Perkins Career and Technical Education application.
Move approval. Oh,
go ahead,
sorry,
Mr. Millar.
Approval of items 8 through 12 and 14 and 15.
You have to exclude 12.
Oh, what? You pulled 12, not 13? Oh, so now I'll congratulate you on that in second.
Thank you. We have Chris Unger making the motion on item number 12, and Mr. Millar seconding it. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes 5-0. Now we have discussion regarding advanced agenda. Would anybody like to begin or have any items they'd like to place before the board? Adrian?
Just real quickly on the technology, we're going to receive an update from our district, but in the meantime, about the technology still with the, right?
That was included in the update.
Okay. And the plan is to offer upgrading the computers to XP, which would pretty much solve the problem, though, right?
That's correct. That was what was asked for, and that's what was given.
Okay, great. And I had something else, too. There's my note. I must have skimmed my update a little too fast there. I meant to visit my dad this weekend, which was totally worth it. I was reading the minutes over that Kim so beautifully writes, and we all know that Code Pink visited last week, and Kim wrote, it was Code Pink's quote, wish for the board to adopt a resolution opposing the war in Iraq so the trillions of dollars spent on the war can be redirected to positive programs like education, close quote. And it sounded so reasonable reading it in the minutes. And, of course, I personally think it is reasonable anyway. But I wondered if the board wanted to consider doing that. I know the board is very interested in tax money being spent for our children and for education. And in like Chris tonight, I thought he had a good quote, too, where he wrote, we should write to our legislators urging that, quote, the budget reflect the best interest of our children. So I know that is the interest of the board. I also know that our board has expressed a view that anything that sounds like partisan politics not be part of our board's activities. So that's a clear message. But I was wondering if we could do a resolution that would address board. And I was thinking of Dante's words, the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in times of great moral crisis maintain their neutrality. You know, sometimes it's good to take a stand on something. Since we are here elected to concern ourselves with this district, but these actions and at the federal level are affecting our own students. So I was just curious if, you know, and even in our own mission statement, we have a statement about individuals who are capable of making contributions to society, which implies, you know, courage and risk-taking. So this would be one opportunity to stand with those who are for ending the spending of trillions of dollars for war and weapons, and for redirecting our national treasure, our money, to support and educate our real national treasures, our young people. And it would have to be worded in such a way, you know, that the board would entertain it.
Let's get to the question. Let's get to the agenda item that you want.
The agenda item is if we could write a resolution that would address those things I just mentioned.
Wouldn't it be, does anybody else want this to come
That's
to
what
the
I'm asking.
Board for an agenda? Not.
That's what
not
we're going to find out.
Going ahead with what you think we should
Would you
do
like to second this, Walter?
No, hell no.
I think the board should spend its time dealing with the issues that are within our justiciable area, those things for which we're responsible. I don't think we should be immersing the board in controversial political positions that have nothing to do with our direct responsibilities. It diminishes the standing of the board within the community. And notwithstanding my personal feelings, which are generally in agreement with yours, I don't think it's an appropriate item for the board's agenda.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
You know, I agree with you, Walter. However, I would support a resolution that encourages the federal government to fully fund public education to an adequate level for all students. As we know that special education isn't fully funded, No Child Left Behind isn't fully funded, and I think a resolution like that encouraging the government to at least live up to their promises would be appropriate coming from the board.
You know, I think that that sounds very directed in the sense that it deals with the funding schemes and the legislation that's in place that we can. The one on behind you, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the,
Russell's pretty good at it.
There's a couple things. I just wanted to officially put on a request that another board member support having the EL discussion come back at an appropriate time when the administration feels that there's enough information to make it valuable, if another board member is in agreement with that. Okay, we have that. So that would be a future agenda item when you all feel that there's enough information. And then there's I came across the material, and in 2005, there was a Senate bill passed in California that created a 16-member Blue Ribbon Commission on Autism that dealt with state-federal law relative to services, early ID and intervention for children with autism, issues impacting adults because of children with autism. The report came out in April, last month, and I was wondering if in a Friday packet or at least at some point the administration could obtain that Blue Ribbon Commission on Autism, that report that's now available. And it was SCR 51. I think it was Senator Perata, P-E-R-A-T-A, that authored that. And in this year's legislative package, there are 8 Assembly and Senate bills that are addressing the issues brought up in that autism report. And I was wondering if someone, maybe Ms. Kirk-Martinez, could look at those Assembly and Senate bills and see how they may impact our district in light of the expanding program that we have for special ed students and also the increasing interest regarding autism. On a Friday packet.
Did the report have a title?
It's just the Blue Ribbon Commission on Autism created by SCR 51, which is the Senate bill. And it's called that Blue Ribbon Commission report on autism. Or it could be called the Blue Ribbon Commission report on autism, I'm not sure. Or the report of the Blue Ribbon. Okay, thanks. Any other requests for advance agenda? Seeing none, I imagine an adjournment at this point would not be out of order.
It's not out of my order.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody, good night.